Hello and welcome back. Our guest tonight is Jensen Karp, whose memoir chronicling his brief career in hip-hop will be released June 7th and can be pre-ordered now at jensenkarp.com. You've been doing a lot of press this week.
But really, the reason that I even had any problem is has nothing to do with the book. It's just the battle raps that I've been doing this week for Corden that have really thrown everything off.
It seems like you really want to focus on promoting the book, and people keep throwing things at you that you can't really refuse. Is that
well? This one, yeah, this is a good example.
Well, and you did the thing with The Rock too, right?
Yeah, and The Rock. Yeah, it's been. I don't know. I don't think we have another one till like the 15th, so I think we're okay.
Another battle rap?
Yeah, another rap battle.
They do two like in 1 week?
We did. That was not the plan, no. But yes, it happened.
And I guess it was successful?
Yeah, it was better than I think they would have ever expected. Yeah, I think we're at 3 million for both on YouTube. I haven't looked today, but that's what I would assume.
So you're essentially teaching people who don't know how to rap how to rap?
Yeah, we're making it better.
What does that even entail? Are you like teaching them like the accent?
Cadence, you know, it's not as hard as it's, I don't know. I've always told people it's not as hard as it seems, and people seem to believe me. And then I teach Anne Hathaway and everyone then believes me, but it's basically like, it's cadence stuff. It's like, you know, it's, if you're a good actor and you can listen to someone else talk and then mimic what they're doing, it's relatively easy.
Right. I guess, and most people have heard rap before and except me, I don't think I could do it at all. It's just kind of, you know, I took German for 3 years and my teacher, she said that I was doing Ozark German.
No, what does that even mean?
I have my way of talking. I can't do impressions. I can't really do anything. I just talk the way I talk.
I get it. Yeah. You're stuck in a spot. I don't know. Anne Hathaway wasn't that surprising. You know what I mean? Like, no one was really surprised that she could rap. And then, but then the next day when we did Schwimmer, I think that was when people were like, oh, you know, I think that was sort of the enlightening. Oh, they could maybe do it with anyone. So
maybe that's the bit, to find the person who is the most unlikely to be good at rapping.
Yeah, it makes my job the hardest. I'm down.
Who would that even be? Like Woody Allen?
Roasting Woody Allen seems like a very fun, exciting thing to do. Who would be? I don't know. I think like Christopher Walken clearly could do it, but it also just would sound like him being, you know, him doing his normal voice.
Yeah, it would be Christopher Walken. Yeah. So the book is coming out next week.
The book comes out June 7th.
It's called Kanye West Owes Me $300 and Other True Stories from a White Rapper Who Almost Made It Big.
Yes, very catchy, very quick title. I'm so excited. It's been, you know, this is a dream of mine to release this book and be able to sort of end my story the right way.
Is that how you look at it, as you're ending that era with this?
And I don't even know what era. I feel like the era ended a long time ago. This is more about like in my own head. Like, it's very difficult to have a dream and have these aspirations and stuff, and then have someone else tell you when it ends. It's you know, messes with your psyche, and it's hard to really figure out when you consider yourself, you know, fulfilled in that way. And being able to go back 15 years, basically, and get the chance to tell the story and put the ending you want on it, which is this book, it's kind of life-changing. It's really meant a lot to me emotionally. And I think people who've read the book and early reviews are surprised at how emotional it is, but it's a big deal for me.
So for people who don't know who you are I imagine you've probably done this enough times that I was thinking maybe I could just do it and you could just tell me when I'm wrong.
Okay, so go. You tell me.
You were 12 years old. You started a rap group with another guy. You were rapping at a bar mitzvah, and you caught the attention of somebody who's associated with Ice-T.
Yes, someone who had some light ties to Ice-T, correct.
And he said, hey, Ice-T, you need to hear this 12-year-old white guy who raps good.
Yeah. And at the time, a white rapper was very, I mean, a kid white rapper was unheard of, but a white rapper at the, you know, was pretty minimal, and you only had really Vanilla Ice, and he was, you know, terrible. There was a couple of people here or there, but, like, you know, I was very early in that, and Donald D, who's a more obscure name within Ice-T's camp, was more our point person. So Donald ended up managing us at that age, yeah.
And you were signed to a record contract there?
No, at 12, I mean, it was as good as for me at the time. We were signed to Rhyme Syndicate, which could have got us a record deal quickly. It was just more of a management deal at that time.
And then you weren't looking to make a career at rap. It was just something you kind of did for fun at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. 12. I don't even know if you can spell career. I was more like, oh, this is a really fun hobby. It was almost like another thing. Cause I loved hip hop so much. It was almost just like another little league, you know?
Yeah. And so then further on down the road, you just entered yourself in like a radio contest.
Yeah, the 12-year-old thing doesn't work out. Kind of strange, yeah. Strange feelings kind of come together on that one. And at 19, I entered a radio contest here in LA where you battle three or four different callers. You call in, and then they put you sort of in like a, you know, conference party line, and you go in turn.
So you're doing this over the phone.
Yes, at first, yeah.
Caller 10 gets to battle rap for two tickets to see Everlast at the Blue Note.
I mean, that's very timely, considering that would have been a good prize. But unfortunately, they don't give out prizes. It was really just like a pride thing, and you would come back the next day, and the next day it was a round robin.
And you just kept beating everyone.
Yeah, the champion before me that had the most wins was 10, and I had 43.
43, so that's 43 straight days?
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, you're also attending college for writing.
I'm a senior. I'm a junior at USC.
And just every day at 4 o'clock, you'd call in and battle rap. How do you battle rap somebody that you've never met over the phone? Do you just make fun of their voice?
Yeah, you got to talk about their voice. You got to talk about their parents. You got to talk about things you don't need to see them about.
And so, again, you're not really pursuing a rap career. I mean, you're not interrupting Puff Daddy's dinner to get a mixtape in his hands. You're just calling in and having fun on a call-in show.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, no, yeah, not an active – I was not actively trying to find a record deal. I was still rapping purely to, like, meet girls.
Was that working?
Yes. Oh, my God. In college, if you're a good rapper, oh, Lord. It was – my only calling card. Don't take it away from me.
And so a bidding war kind of starts because they want this guy who is winning these battle raps on the radio.
Yeah.
And you eventually sign $1 million record contract with Interscope Records.
Yeah, around $1 million with Jimmy Iovine and his Interscope Records company, yeah.
And they put a lot of money behind the project, and then you work with a lot of established rap. I guess they were they famous at the time? Because, I mean, like, you know, Redman, okay, Redman was probably famous then.
Yes, and he was big, yeah.
Fabulous was big.
Definitely
then.
More famous than he is now.
Where is Redman now?
It's a great question.
Where's Fabulous now?
Fabulous is having a great career.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Fabulous continues to be a strong sort of B-level rapper who releases like radio singles every once in a while, but he's still doing it. Redman put out an album last year, and it was or this beginning of this year, and it was actually pretty good. But, you know, hip-hop does not allow aging. We know that. So they're not as popular as they were at one time. But
and I guess the bigger names on the list would be Kanye West, Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas, and Mark McGrath.
And Sugar Ray, yeah.
That's the big one, right?
Oh God, please! That's what built me a house. I'm joking. That meant nothing. No one cares. The one that I do like the most. I mean, I did a song with Maya, which I really like. And then there's people like DJ Quick, which was a huge deal for me to work with him, and DJ Clue, and the production, including them and Kanye, was really sort of what I remember the most.
So that's kind of where my Google train ended because I found that. The album didn't come out, and they were told that we're just dropping this, but I didn't really find why. I imagine brought up in the book.
Yeah, that makes two of us, though. There's no real official word. The official wording as to why my album came out that was delivered by a Interscope statement was scheduling conflicts, which doesn't tell you much. But, you know, over the years, there's been theories and conspiracies, and I've been called by a lot of higher-up industry people to be told that, the label wasn't interested in putting out any white rapper at the time while Eminem is flying.
Was Eminem kind of your nucleus to your Pied Piper, and then everybody was kind of like, oh, we can't also put out a white rapper?
Maybe. I mean, I never really know the answer. What I know is you know, as a radio fan, I know that they would never, you know, K-Rock would never have had Howard Stern at 11 a.m. and I Miss at 1.
Right.
They would have never done that. And that's because you don't want to make Howard mad. He's, you know, selling so many ads, and there's no reason to shake your own cage. And I get it at 36 years old. It makes total sense to me. And I wasn't the only one affected. Bubba Sparks was affected a lot.
Bubba Sparks, other than being white, he doesn't sound like Eminem.
Right. I mean, Deliverance is one of my favorite albums that Interscope's ever put out.
Right.
And
right.
It was thrown into a trash can, you know, marketing wise. And I think that it's just no one wanted to get close to real. I mean, why would you? Why would you infuriate the man who's keeping the lights on?
Right.
And I think that was the problem. I don't think that Eminem woke up one day, picked up a red phone and said, don't put it out.
Don't put it out.
I think that there was a larger talk of like, why would you do that?
But isn't that kind of a trend, though? I mean, like, Incubus is popular, so tell those Hoobastanks to sound like Incubus. And now we have 100 Incubuses. That isn't a thing in rap, I guess?
Well, that would be, I mean, I would have to remember exactly where Hoobastank was signed, which if I knew that for sure, you should probably kill me, because that's trivia I don't need in my brain. But I know that Incubus was support. I mean, I grew up with both of them, so Incubus supported Hoobastank. I believe they were also on different labels, but Incubus was one of the reasons, you know, they took them out on the, took Hoobastank out on the road.
Oh, I didn't know that they took each other out on the road. I just know that you can't tell which one is which sometimes.
Yeah. We grew up next door to each other. So like, you know, Incubus went to Calabasas and Hoobastank went to Agoura High. So they were right next to each other and those guys influenced each other and were happy to help, you know, each other's acts. And that we didn't have that at Interscope. There was no, it was a real weird feeling over there at times.
So they approach you, they throw a lot of money on you. They're putting all this time and effort into this project, and then they just shelf it indefinitely.
Correct. Yeah.
And I mean, is there a lot of these? Cause I feel like I've heard this story.
Yeah.
Why would you put that much money into something and then just change your mind?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the sign also that my record, you know, it's the thing that shows there's a little more going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
Record labels usually don't spend that much on an album and shelve it completely. What they'll do sometimes is put out a single, it doesn't work out, and then go, well, we're not going to be able to invest in the album. I didn't have anything come out. You know, I'd never put out anything to even get a gauge to the marketplace, which is extremely rare, right? But yes, you hear a lot about sort of scrapped records and thrown away budgets, and that they're tax write-offs for companies that big.
Did you try to catch on somewhere else, or?
No, not immediately.
Did you lose your confidence in?
Yes, I lost a lot. I was 21 years old, turning 22, and I just didn't know what to do. You know, you for 3 years of my life, basically, I had been sold this kind of bill of goods that just didn't come together. And even though I had a ton of fun, and you'll read in the book, there's so many kind of funny, ridiculous things from recording with Kanye to writing with Cisco to, I mean, all these things that like, cause I look like an accountant, you know what I mean? Like, I don't look like your normal rapper.
Right.
So like it's very fish out of water stuff. And that was the fun stuff. But then to have it all screeching, you know, really was like Wednesday, I had a marketing call to get ready to put my music out. Thursday, I was told that basically they're never going to do anything again with me.
Jeez.
It was that crazy. And at that age, that's devastating.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I didn't know what to do, and I started trying to figure out other jobs and other things to my life because rap felt very, I felt like a victim. And I had tried some other business ventures sort of in those few months with that publishing money and a bunch of stuff. And when I ran out of money, someone in New York, a small independent record label, was willing to put out music with me, thought that I got a unfair shake. And I took that, and that was sort of my second attempt. It was an indie deal. The advance was like $5,000, which is so much different than how much I took home from Interscope. But it, that $5,000 really helped me.
And so now you actually are doing things. I mean, I'm not saying that you didn't love rap, but that wasn't really what you were setting out to do. And
sort of. I mean, I loved it so much. So it's hard. I was a student of the game. I know, that is what I am a nerd about. You know, people go, oh, I'm a nerd. I go, well, I'm not really a nerd. But if you put me in a room about hip hop, I will embarrass myself with how much I know and how much I care about. And that was another thing about my career, which was, I talk like this. I rap like this. It's different for rap music. I was never willing to like change my voice or talk about guns or talk about drug sales or anything that was trendy at the time in 2001. Because I love it too much. I'm not willing to sacrifice this art that I appreciate people being real in.
Right.
And so I tried again and this was an indie record and my body was telling me not to do it. I knew professionally that that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to move on and start writing, which is a career I've been lucky enough to have now. And I learned the hard way to not do something just for money and sort of had a hard time with that. And that's sort of where the book goes.
Well, I'm looking forward to, I found you on accident.
How's that happen?
Actually, I'll tell you. I was looking for Chuck Klosterman's new book on Amazon, and
yes,
your book was suggested.
Oh, great!
And then I just kind of fell into when you end up going on like a 4-hour Wikipedia binge, and you don't really know how it happened.
Yeah, and you find out that like one of the monkeys was also like addicted to methamphetamines. I mean, I totally understand that.
Right.
That
so I'm looking for Chuck Klosterman's book. I find your book. I think it's interesting.
Thank you.
I want to learn more. I find your podcast. Now I'm a listener of the podcast. It's a weird thing how it happens. But all in all, I'm looking forward to the book. I recommend people check it out because it's a crazy story.
It is. It's insane. And it's so funny because Klosterman is a huge influence on me. And I think, if you're a big Klosterman fan, this is sort of your hip hop version of a crazy industry story that, no one else can tell. It's never happened.
Hip hop Klosterman.
It is. Hip hop Klosterman pop. I can't come up with it. Too early. But I do very much like Chuck, and I think that's the world I live in. So I appreciate that.
So Kanye West owes me $300 and other true stories from a white rapper who almost made it big.
Yeah.
JensenKarp.com. That's Karp with a K.
Yes.
At JensenClan88 on Twitter.
That's with a C because I'm not racist.
Right.
Right.
Jensen, I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you so much.
Thinking back to when my daddy told me what it's all about. He said, no matter what I do in life, some of y'all about. I can deal with that long as all my posts is eating good. Let that chatter pass over more than any Easter good. I'm on the roll again and I ain't talking ecstasy.